Prof. Kroch, welcome to Cape Talk. It's really good to have you.
No, thank you for having me.
And can this serve as an invitation for you to also come in maybe one day so we can celebrate your life and contribution, which is absolutely huge and everybody needs to know about it.
Well, I mean, we're talking now about a real giant today, eh?
I knew you were going to play down your very own contribution. I just expected that, Prof. Kroch. But yes, we are talking about an absolute giant, a giant that inspired so very many of us, a giant that found the attention of Nelson Mandela and so many others. What was it? What was it about Professor Jakes Carville that made so many people still sit up and think about him and his contribution to this country?
You know, when I went through a whole lot of things the past week to discuss today, you know, the first thing that caught my eye is that he got his BA in Afrikaans and Sociology cum laude at UWC. Then his BA honors was cum laude. Then he went to do a D.Lit. et Phil. At the University of Brussels, in Belgium. And that he did, he received a magna cum laude. So, I mean, he is coming from Komadaga. He helped his father on the farm. He went to ordinary small schools in the Eastern Free State. And he, you know, he gets summa cum laude for his academic work. It's unbelievable.
Are you saying more people from rural communities must come to universities?
You know, sometimes I think it's because one comes from a small town, as I do come from a small town. You don't know really better. You think
I'm sure,
and then you are fine, you know. But you are never so aware of competition as I think you are when you're in very smart, you know, very competitive schools.
I'm sure Komadaga was a lot smaller than Kroonstad.
Yeah, it was.
I'm sure it was just a little dodgy.
No, it was. And you must, the primary school he went to was established by his father and mother because they wanted the children to go to school close by. But I mean, that one should not ever underestimate the IQ, the brain of Jakes Carville. You know, we all talk about his humanity and his way to lead people to talk and to negotiate. But yeah, he had a brilliant mind.
Take us into that mind, Professor Kroch. What did you encounter in that mind?
There's several things. I mean, one of the things that I came across in the latest book by André Oortendaal, Dear Comrade President, it says that in February 1988, Professor Jakes Carville received a secretly hand-delivered letter from Lusaka-based NEC member John Nkadi Meng that they identified him as a key internal leader. And they say, "We are at this moment in need of people of your caliber and capabilities." So they asked him to come to Swaziland on a holiday, and then the ANC met him there, and then he assisted Thabo Mbeki in putting up a think tank in South Africa to advise the ANC on policies and on when you take over how you should do it. So it means already during that time, while he was vice chancellor of UWC, and you know, if you look at that, he built the Afrikaans and Dutch department at UWC. He built that into the largest Afrikaans department in the world, but wow, in South Africa. At the time where radical people of color were against Afrikaans,
yes,
he managed to do that.
Yes.
So, yeah. And then what I find amazing, which he further did, UWC was regarded as a, you know, for colored people, for clear language. Eh? Mm. And then Afrikaans was supposed to be the language. He let that fall. He opened the university. When he declared that it was the university of the left, he opened it. So you could come there and study in English, which then opened it up for all people from the Eastern Cape, all black people in South Africa. I remember someone like Sandy Ledikeni said suddenly, I could go to a university. So he was so very progressive and ahead of his time while establishing Afrikaans thoroughly, at the same time making it possible for everyone to come to the university.
You know, when you look at the University of the Western Cape, and specifically at Prof. Jakes Gerwel's tenure at the time there, absolutely fit for purpose. This was a very, very difficult time indeed. People were questioning about the role of Afrikaans still post 1976. My mens het ook Afrikaans gepraat, and there was about embracing this language as more than just the language that some would have it as their own. Tell us about this period of time there and those kind of loose ends that he brought together somehow.
The issue of Afrikaans, he took further. It was always because he specialized in Afrikaans and he had a very deep love for Afrikaans literature, especially two writers. One is Karel Schoeman. He became a kind of expert in Karel Schoeman's work, and then also Van Wyklo. I know that he could quote endlessly from Van Wyklo, and you could phone him in his suitcase, you know, his akte tas that he carried everywhere. He carried Van Wyklo's poetry volumes. But at one stage, he was put on a body to work out the issue of languages for the universities, because it was now said Bloemfontein must leave Afrikaans, Pretoria must leave Afrikaans, there's a fight at Stellenbosch. What do you do with Afrikaans that is actually an academic language? If a university is not looking after it, it will wilt. So together with a few other experts, he made this unbelievably genius recommendation to Kader Asma that every language in South Africa should have a university that looks after it. So, say for example, KwaZulu-Natal looks after isiZulu. It must have an isiZulu chair, it must look after the diaries, it must look after the literature, it must look after the writers, and so for every language.
And that was never
taken up by Kader Asma.
So clearly he was keen on mother tongue.
He was keen on inclusiveness. You know, that every language should be embraced. Mm. It must have a place somewhere. And I keep on wondering what he would have said if he now knows that at UWC, at the CMDR, they are writing the Dictionary of Carps.
Yes.
So Afrikaans has developed in various ways at UWC.
I want to know from you. I'm chatting with Professor Anki Kroch, and we are learning here about a national treasure. We're reflecting and celebrating the life and contribution of Professor Jakes Gerwel on the 10th anniversary of his death. There's such a lot of exciting, creative stuff happening in Afrikaans, including Afrikaaps. Can we trace it back to this activism that came through the university? He enabled the coexistence of languages, in the process also made people own Afrikaans differently to how it was proposed.
Absolutely. And even if you look at who studies what is prescribed, UWC's Afrikaans department has become actually the main voice on poets of color, writers of color. In other words, the articles that have been written, the theses that are written, the books that are being written deal with what has been neglected in the broader sense of standard Afrikaans. So Jakes's involvement there, and there was a lot of publications while he was at the Afrikaans department, publications that took up township people's simple poetry, as well as academics, as well as, you know, they invited and they published these books, and they are rare treasures today because you find their the grain during the apartheid times of Afrikaans.
You mentioned earlier Professor Anki Kroch in conversation about Professor Jake Scherl. You mentioned earlier that he declared the University of the Western Cape as the University of the Left. What did he mean by that?
You know, books have been written about it. I think mainly it was a signal to say we're radical. Yeah? It's to say we socialist, that we include, you know, the poor, we include the rejected, we include the marginalized, we are for the marginalized. And then during those pre-election years and pre-1990 years, he established, for example, the School of Development, which was to develop policies. They established a special center at the law faculty, that Dalla Oma. So all the exiles coming back from overseas, from universities, immediately went to UWC. They all became professors because they were professors somewhere else in Europe or America, and they came back. So when Mandela compiled his first cabinet, it was like a, you know, it sucked UWC, all smart names. It was, they all suddenly ministers in the cabinet. But it was to center yourself for radical new thinking.
Yes.
And you know, Jakes also wrote a column for Rapport, ne?
Yes.
Now you must remember there's no harde tye, ne? There's a deep Afrikaners there.
Ek ken nie da. Ek het die rapport gelees. Dis die enigste Sondag koerant wat ons by die huis gelees het. Maar ja, vertel die storie asseblief tog.
Hy en daar, he wrote a column in there that was very controversial, but also always calm and well argued. So in one of these articles that stays with me for so long, he said that he was in a group and they would talk about how natural it is actually racial prejudice and that one should acknowledge, accept and deal with it. And then he says, my astonished protest that I have no racial prejudice was greeted with unbelief. Later, a friend who was a psychiatrist said to me that having no racial prejudice in South Africa was actually abnormal. This notion that it was humanly abnormal not to carry racial prejudice bothered him, that was Jakes. Yeah. And so he started thinking, but why? He can't be the only one. And he says, there must be others who are also blessed in this way of not having racial prejudice. But the real question is, how did we become this way?
Yes.
And then he says, in my case, I can trace it back to my living circumstances and growing up at home. I had the privilege that both my parents lived and talked in ways that never accentuated race or ethnicity as important markers. Each of my parents in a different manner. My father's quiet and deep-lived humaneness was legendary in that small part of the world. My fiery mother, born already as mixed culture, formed me through the vocal non-racialism that was part of her strong skepticism about human beings. But more importantly, both of them fluently spoke isiXhosa, Afrikaans, and English. And then he says, but there's also the teachers. Eastern Cape teachers who regarded racism as a lower form of human consciousness. Our school song in Uitenhage had the line, dispel ignorance, hatred, and discrimination, burn your light. And then he concludes, so here I sit today, a little way past half of my life, and I still think racism is a fallback in our humanity.
You say calm and well argued, and we get the academic, we get the activist, but somehow politician just doesn't sit with him. He's never been a politician.
No, and in the beginning it was so that the ANC and especially Mandela were were keen to think intellectually about how and what leadership is. But I mean, now racism is your ticket, is your meal ticket. The more racist you can create, the better your chances of being in parliament.
Yeah, and the more votes you can get.
Yeah, that brings the vote.
It's playing to nationalist constituencies, and that's what he stood against. Absolutely, I think that was such an important part that you shared there with us. You know, 10 years ago is pretty recent. How did he feel? Where did he feel the country was at 10 years ago? At a on a good trajectory or a bad trajectory? I'm chatting with Professor Ankie Krog. We're reflecting on the life of and the legacy of and celebrating Professor Jakes Carville, of course, on the 10th anniversary of his death. Where was he saying? What did he say? Are we going in the right direction, wrong direction, 10 years ago?
The Jakes Carville Foundation has a website, and on that is an interview by Professor John Higgins with Jakes. And there you could see already that he knew things were going wrong. And he was sad, for example, that Marxism has disappeared, in other words, class, that suddenly everything is race, nothing is class, and that the term non-racialism has
failed us,
has disappeared. People are not talking about that anymore. It's black, and you should learn your place within a black context.
I would have read maybe him to say that non-racialism has failed us, that we should look at anti-racism, because that would make us focus on the class issues, because this is where the schism is.
Yeah, it's especially the class issue that is a mess. So there's no sense anymore. He said he puts it so nicely. He says the concept of solidarity has been exchanged for entrepreneurship. So you must make money. That you must make your own living. You must be an entrepreneur. You must survive. But there's no sense of solidarity anymore, that we want to focus the country on a more equal life for everyone.
We say there's a dearth of leadership in our country, and we lament that pretty seriously. Or at least it's not presenting itself to us. Do you feel that there is that kind of dearth?
Yeah, I mean, and being a naive poet, I say it because they don't quote poetry anymore. You know, Mandela always had poems in his speeches. Even Mbeki had.
Yes.
But, I mean, Zuma.
I am an African. Oh, yes. I love that one especially.
And Zuma sang. Yeah, but Zuma sang. And after, I mean, at least Tumamina, our current president, brought in Tumamina at the first speech. And I thought, okay, it's a beginning. It's not a poem, but at least, you know, and now it's gone. It's gone. It's as dry as dirt. And it means that you have let go of imagining us in another space, in unifying us together in a space where we all can breathe. It's really, yeah, I think it is. But what is very positive for me is civil society.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you find that, yeah, this is the people who is pulling the country through. And then also on ordinary people. One of the stories on the Jakes Carville website is also by Andre Oudendaal, how Jakes became involved in cricket.
Yeah.
When Hein, his son, when he took Hein to play cricket at the club. And he sat achter op a bakkie and they sang songs, and Jakes just became completely involved. And that is that kind of solidarity doesn't matter that you have a cum laude, you know, you sit achter op a bakkie and you enjoy cricket. He also wrote one of his pieces in die Burger, in the rapport is, die ondergemiddelde kolber. You know, the what is a kolber?
Yeah, the batsman. Mid-order batsman.
Yeah. Nee, but the mid-order, the end that is below.
Below mid-order, okay, yes.
Is below standard. Hy is nog net altijd een slechte kolber.
Okay.
But he loves cricket, and you must respect him, and you must be with him.
You know, we have forgotten Vanguard Drive, this road that joins communities, diverse communities, linguistic, cultural, and class communities. I think it's nearly a fitting attribute to this man that attempted exactly that, to bring people regardless together.
It's true. And, you know, part of me sees how the contribution of colored people are being discarded, forgotten. It's a great worry, because that means that democracy is not really well understood.
I think you're leaving us with a whole lot to think about, and probably inspired by the relationship that you've had with Professor Jakes Cavill. We're going to have to wrap it there. Professor Ankie Krog, we thank you, we appreciate you, we love you, and we're going to create some time to talk just about you and your poetry, if you don't mind. But that was, of course, Professor Ankie Krog reflecting on the life, celebrating the life of Professor Jakes Cavill.